You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday morning, April the 27th, and it's time for our Friday Week in Review. When we look at the top headlines, the top issues, political issues from the past week, and find out what our two guests have to say about them. Joining me on my right is David Blaska, a former Dane County supervisor and appointee to the Thompson administration, and he's currently a contributing writer to the Isthmus newspaper in Madison. Good morning.
Joy, it's good to be back.
And also on my left, actually right in front of me, is Ed Garvey, editor and publisher of FightingBob.com, senior partner in the law firm of Garvey, McNeil, and McGilvery. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Joy.
And you can join us by calling 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. What happened in the news this week that you would like to talk about or that you would like to bring up? We certainly will talk about the headline, top stories in the headlines this morning, is that the Senate did pass yesterday on a 51-46 vote, largely along party lines, the Iraq funding bill that includes a timetable for the withdrawal of troops. The White House immediately said this was dead before arrival, and there will be a veto ceremony scheduled for next week. Next week is also, Ed Garvey, the fourth anniversary of the president's mission accomplished speech that was that would be Tuesday, where he proclaimed that major combat in the war in Iraq was over. Your thoughts on this showdown between the president and Congress over the Iraq funding bill and the timetable for withdrawal?
Well, I sort of like what Dennis Kucinich had to say, and that is that if the Democrats are going to stop the war, they should do it and stop funding it. So the current issue is a bit of a distraction in that while they set a timeline for the removal of troops, they didn't say they're going to cut off the troops, or cut off the money, rather, and therefore it's somewhat meaningless. Excuse me. On the other hand, it's taken so long for this Congress to wake up that I grab onto any crumbs I can. So I'm delighted it passed both houses, and I think it could actually override a veto.
You think so?
It's possible. Not likely, but it's possible. Because the war is so unpopular at this point. I think there are about four people who really support it, and perhaps Dave Blaska makes number five, I'm not sure.
Four and a half.
All right, Dave, what do you think?
Well, I did. I think we both of our jaws dropped when Ed said that there's a chance it would survive a veto. It's.
I've never been right, by the way.
Okay. Well, that'll keep your track record going. But, you know, in many ways, the Democrats have the best of both worlds here. They could prevail. They won't. And that's, I think, what they're counting on, because if the war does go even farther south than it has, they can say, told you so. And if it does, if we do turn the corner under General Petraeus, they can say, we held the president's feet to the fire. And I said this when I was a reporter for the Capital Times, it's very, very difficult to cover the legislative body because they take hundreds of votes on things. And a legislator can point to having voted both ways. I mean, in a way, John Kerry was right. You know, he did vote for it before he voted against it. And you have so many votes on these things. This obviously is a seminal vote. I don't think it's a constitutional crisis, but it does reflect a very divided country.
Well, also, the war is such a disaster. It's hard to describe it. I mean, when you think about 14 soldiers being killed in one day, hundreds of Iraqi citizens, they're now beginning to admit that over several hundred thousand Iraqis have died. The Red Cross says that the refugee situation is now a travesty and unacceptable. I mean, we're talking about 1.5 million refugees from Iraq that are in neighboring countries, and thousands leaving, including, you know, the professionals, so that the doctors and nurses and others are getting out of the country. So it's the country is now a total disaster, and so when they're talking about a surge, they're just making it up as they go along.
Well, there is, and I said 4.5. I'm going to disappoint some of my friends and colleagues in saying that I think one of the, I don't know which Democrat, one of the lines was that the United States military should not be serving as the beat cop for Iraq's civil war, and in many ways we are. We're going door to door.
With one exception, they can't even speak the language. I mean, put yourself in the position of one of our soldiers going door to door in Baghdad. You don't know the customs. You don't know the language. You don't know what's going on. It's an impossible position to be in, and I think we've just got to get those troops home now.
Well, I mean, that was the case in Berlin and other places, too. I mean, I don't know that you can – there's no difference in that. I mean, you cite the numbers, but they pale in comparison with other. But I do think, and as we approach a presidential election year, Democrats somehow have to enunciate an offensive game plan. I mean, it'd be as if the Packers drafted nothing but defensive players. They've got to play offense. And what is the offense on the war against terror? I think a couple of years ago, Nancy Pelosi responded to the president's State of the Union address with, I think we needed to do more to inspect cargo coming in our ships and our ports. Well, I immediately went out and bought stock in the company that makes crowbars, because we have a. We can do that. We can, you know. I traveled internationally recently. You know, they can check our bottles of water as we go on. But that's not going to win and solve the problem that we have.
We're going to bring in some callers. Will in DeForest is with us first. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
And I would like to ask the guest. I was listening to what he said about the Democrats had it both ways of what they could say of. Things turn around, that they were holding Bush's feet to the fire, and the other way, if it didn't work, they had it too. But wouldn't this be a wrong move when they are playing politically, when lives are involved, as to whether we should get out of Iraq now or not? And I feel it wouldn't be worth it to play the political game when they have the power of the purse and they can stop the funding now.
Yeah, that's what you think, Ed Garvey?
Well, I think they should just say, look, we're not going to fund this anymore. I mean, this phony argument that they're going to try to cut off the money to the troops is nonsense. We ought to be now working with the UN to get replacement troops to come in as our troops are withdrawn. So I hope that the Democrats will understand. You can't negotiate with George Bush. I mean, the guy is disconnected from reality, and he's simply not going to agree. If he won't fire Alberto Gonzalez after this fiasco of his testimony before Congress, he's not going to negotiate with Nancy Pelosi or Senator Reid.
Well, and and Nancy Pelosi is willing to negotiate apparently with the president of Syria. I appreciate the caller's comments, and I think the one thing you can, I think, I'd have to say about President Bush is he does not play political games.
Now let's bring in Jim and Westby. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you taking my call. My concern about the legislation is how it exemplifies what the legislature, both state and federal, have digressed to in what I would call legislation by prostitutes. And I don't want to comment on the merits of the legislation, because then that clouds the overall issue that when $25 million is going to issues unrelated, it should exemplify the need for a Jimenez bill or action, because I think it's outrageous how we pass meaningful legislation with all sorts of things attached to it that have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, he's talking about all the pork in the bill.
I did notice that, and I give a lot of credit to Senator Feingold for supporting partial veto power. I'm not sure. I don't recall what happened. I think previously, I think the Supreme Court may have knocked it down. I don't know how you'd have to change the Constitution, apparently. But
yeah, Russ Feingold and Paul Ryan are backing this bill, line item veto bill.
The problem with the line item is what we saw under Tommy Thompson, and that is it gives all the power to the executive and almost no power to the legislative branch. The executive branch has so much authority now, and of course with the Bush Supreme Court now getting ready to gallop across our rights, I'm not sure that Russ is on the right track on this one. Seems to me that the Congress ought to behave itself, and I certainly agree with the sentiment, as I think David would. They should have a pure bill that deals only with Iraq. I would, of course, say with mandatory time limits for withdrawal. Others would disagree, but they shouldn't mix it up with dams in Idaho and highways in Wisconsin.
So, Ed, you've got your call into Senator Fred Risser then?
Well, if I talk to Fred, I will tell him I think we should eliminate it in Wisconsin, that's for sure.
I think there's a 12-year waiting period, though. You want to get that 14 years in that Tommy enjoyed with it, right?
Boy, we got lots of callers on this, and we'll still talk a little bit about the whole Iraq war situation. But your prediction then, Ed Garvey, on this bill that the president says he's going to veto is that that Senate will override.
It's possible. Mm-hmm. It's possible, and I think they'll certainly pick up votes. It's going to be a lot closer than and Bush seems so intent on every day the drumbeat of saying, I'm going to veto it, that I think they're nervous that some of the Republicans are going to abandon ship because they're up for reelection. And this war is now supported by maybe 20% of the American people. You can't win a war that is based on lies in a war that is not supported by the American people.
That's wishful thinking, though. Usually it works the other way around, Ed. I think if you observe, it could be a very close vote on the passage or almost a two-thirds vote, but then when it comes to sustaining a governor's veto, they tend to rush the other way. I think if people were afraid of election, they would have said they would have voted against it if that was the fear.
So you think it's they're not going to be able to override the veto, Dave Blasko. What do you see happening with this whole issue?
Well, it'll be the same. We're going to continue to go on. It's it is the president's war. He does, though, have, I think, a real profile and courage is a senator from Connecticut, Joe Lieberman, who still remains, and fought an election over this issue and prevailed.
Yeah. Let's take a short pause. We'll continue reviewing the news of the week. We'll still be talking some about the war in Iraq as we will review what the Democratic candidates for president. The first 2008 presidential candidate debate was held last night, and we'll talk a little bit about that after the break. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine talking this week with Dave Blaska and Ed Garvey. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is coming up after 9 o'clock, and Kathleen and her guests will review last night's debate among most of the Democratic candidates running for president in 2008. It was the first debate among the candidates. It was on MSNBC. And we won't be able to play everything from last night, but let's take a listen to what candidate John Edwards had to say about Iraq and then Hillary Clinton's response.
Senator Clinton and anyone else who voted for this war has to search themselves and decide whether they believe they voted the right way. If so, they can support their vote. If they believe they didn't, I think it's important to be straightforward and honest.
I take responsibility for my vote. Obviously, I did as good a job I could at the time. It was a sincere vote based on the information available to me. And I've said many times that if I knew then what I now know, I would not have voted that way.
So that issue continues to dog Hillary Clinton, Ed Garvey. She voted for this resolution authorizing war and won't, I guess, apologize or say it was a mistake.
Well, you know, Hillary Clinton acts as if that were the only opportunity for her to say something. A majority of the House Democrats voted against that bill, and she voted for it. So when she says if she had known then what she knows now, maybe she should have talked to some of Dave Obey and to Dennis Kucinich and others who knew perfectly well, or Russ Feingold, what was happening. But equally important, she supported it for the 4 years following that. So it's not just her vote. It was her support and her assurances that the training was going better and, you know, appearing with Lindsey Graham and so on. So I think she's got a tough row to hoe in terms of convincing Democrats that she's had an epiphany.
Mm-hmm. Dave Blaska?
Well, I think if Mitt Romney was watching this, I think he might have had some might have thought of his father saying in the Vietnam War that he was brainwashed, and that's basically what I heard Hillary saying.
And Romney was brainwashed, which is, of course, the interesting part.
A light rinse.
What did you think was significant about that debate, if anything, Ed Garvey?
Well, I think, once again, the Democrats are allowing corporate America to set the pattern for the debates. Instead of having the party set up the debates or the League of Women Voters or someone, they're allowing corporate America through Brian Williams and CNBC and Tucker Carlson. These are the people, you know, Joe Scarborough. These are people who are clearly in their hearts and minds dedicated to the Republican Party. So they raise the wedge issues rather than dealing with economics. You know, how do you feel about partial birth abortion and you know, what about affirmative action? I think the Democrats ought to regain control of their own party, not to mention what happens with elections.
Mm. Any thoughts on the debate last night?
Well, I wasn't on Fox, so I didn't watch it.
He was in the henhouse.
Well, you know, actually, speaking of which, I did a program on how the Democratic candidates or the Democratic Party are, boycott is too strong a word, but are not appearing on. They backed out of debates that Fox was going to be sponsoring.
Yeah, that's interesting. We can play that too. I think when George Bush Sr. Dusted it up a little bit with Dan Rather on CBS, I think that, and you go all the way back, I suppose, to Nixon's henchman, Vice President
Spiro Agnew.
But there is a. We may go back to the founding days of our country where you had the Republican paper and the Democratic paper, only it's not going to be in print anymore. It's going to be broadcast media.
Well, there was some great news this week. Bill Moyers is back. So perhaps the Democrats could ask Bill Moyers to set up the discussion and the debate rather than Brian Williams. I mean, we're headed toward a situation where the corporate powers are going to frame the issues for the candidates, so we'll get down to a choice between the most conservative Democrat and number two.
Well, what are these issues that you keep talking about?
Well, a higher minimum wage, making it a living wage, single-payer health care, you know, taking care of our schools, funding our special education needs. I mean,
Dennis Kucinich is talking about that, and he's bringing up the rear again. I mean, that's
Dennis doesn't quite have the image, unfortunately, of a candidate.
We're going to talk a little bit about something Dennis Kucinich wants to do, as that's in the news this week. But first, CJ in Stoughton has been waiting. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I think the liberation of Iraq. I would like to hear from your guests who supported John Kerry in the last election, because he stated when he was running for president that success in Iraq, no matter what the cost in lives and money, and thank God, a man of those convictions, he flip-flopped when Howard Dean started to lead in the primaries.
Yeah. Can we bring this to this week, though?
Well, how about what Harry Reid said? The man should be forced to resign, saying the war is lost. He is playing politics, and so are the Democrats with our troops' lives.
All right. CJ says Harry Reid should resign because he said the war in Iraq was lost. Ed Garvey?
Well, I do think anyone who tells the truth should resign. I think they don't have a place in Washington. You know, everybody thinks the war is lost, except those who have the responsibility of trying to sell the surge, like John McCain, who then goes off and sings about bomb, 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 bomb Iran.
That's right. Yeah.
So Harry Reid is telling the truth. I think that practically all of the former generals who were there are telling the truth. This is a disaster, a fiasco, whatever adjective you want to come up with, but we've got to get out of there. It's a civil war. The country is falling apart or has fallen apart. And the one thing that seems to unify the Iraqis at this point is they all want us to leave.
Well, just not right now, though. I mean, even what's his
name? No, I think Friday or Saturday.
Yeah,
next week.
Or April 1st. I think they chose, April 1st advisedly because it is April Fool's Day. You know, you mentioned Civil War. A little history is in order here. Abraham Lincoln was very fearful that he would be replaced by a general that he canned,
McMillan.
No, it wasn't McMillan.
McClellan.
McClellan, thank you. And he famously said, you know, if you're not going to use the army, let me borrow it for a while. Fortunately for, I think, the nation, much less for Abraham Lincoln, he had the defeats started to turn into victories, and I think it was Gettysburg. So that may be where we're at with this.
Well, do you think Harry Reid should resign because he said
no,
the war in Iraq was lost?
Not at all. No, I think we need to have this debate. You'll always see David Blask on the side of full debate and not choking debate off. That's what Congress is there for. They are the people's representatives, but this country is divided.
Yeah, we also heard this in the news this week from John McCain.
I announce my candidacy for President of the United States.
He had certainly hinted and said he was going to announce, going to announce, going to announce, and he finally formally announced that he is a candidate. Ed Garvey, he's got some problems with you know, public support.
Pathetic is the word that comes to me when I've watched John McCain recently. I mean, that little stroll through the market in Baghdad with Black Hawk helicopters overhead and 100 heavily armed soldiers around him, pretending that things are so good in Baghdad that he could walk through the market. Once that was exposed, and then he started switching to that we should bomb Iran. I think John McCain has completely lost his moral compass. 8 years ago, I was hoping he wouldn't get the Republican nomination out of fear that I might, in a moment of craziness, vote for him. But now, you know, he's gone back on just about everything that made him attractive 8 years ago. So I think this is a short-lived candidacy, and he'll be gone within a month.
Mm-hmm. Dave Blaska?
Well, at least he's not pulling a Hillary Clinton. At least he's a man of principle. He's holding true to his principles. You know what you get with John McCain, and you can vote for him or against him. John McCain's problem, as I get it, is that he has alienated a lot of Republicans over the years, including with McCain-Feingold, but and on other issues.
You know, last week I did play the John McCain singing "Bomb, Bomb, Bomb." To the Barbara Ann Beach Boys song, and there was a little bit of flap about that this week. And McCain is, refusing to apologize for that, and just the other day played that song at a campaign rally.
Good for him.
There must be a school that the Republicans run for Alberto Gonzalez and for John McCain, and people who say, never concede that you've made a mistake or done something that's so stupid that everyone who listened to it had reached the same conclusion, but. He was asked, do you think you've offended anyone? And, of course, he said, whom, the Iranians, as if they're not real people. I mean, we ought to be dealing with the Iranians, negotiating with the Iranians, and trying to stop them from developing nuclear weapons instead of threatening them with silliness on the campaign trail.
Well, if we don't have a weapon, it would be like Iran negotiating with Luxembourg. Why would they?
Luxembourg's a nice place.
My grandfather's from there. Tom and Tomahawk.
See? Oh, now you got it.
Tom and Tomahawk, go ahead.
Yesterday, listening to more of this discussion on the war, I heard, and I missed the name of the Republican who said it, but he was claiming flat out that we can attribute the lack of attack on this country to the war in Iraq, that we are holding al-Qaeda there. And his words essentially were, I don't know why we went after them in Afghanistan, and now we're afraid to go after them in Iraq, and that doesn't make sense. So does he know something I don't know about how al-Qaeda is now being held at bay in Iraq, and that's why we don't have any attacks here? No, do you guys know anything about that?
I think he followed it up by saying that the moon is made out of green cheese and that global warming is a myth. No, you know, there have been so many lies that it's impossible to find out the truth. But just about everyone who has gone there has said that what this war has done is to create a base for al-Qaeda that was not there prior to the war, and that we've now created more problems than we know how to deal with. I mean, what scares me as a citizen is, what are we talking about if we get involved with Iran, if we get involved in overthrowing Syria or get involved in Lebanon? We could be talking about the next century of American troops being sacrificed on behalf of the oil industry.
Let's talk a little bit about former CIA Director George Tenet being in the news. He talked to CBS's 60 Minutes. It'll be aired on Sunday. Says that his now famous slam dunk comment about Iraq was misused by war backers. He says he was referring broadly to the case that could be made against Saddam Hussein, and not the alleged weapons of mass destruction, and in essence saying that he's tired of being made the scapegoat, believed that that the decision to go to war with Iraq had already been made before he even made that comment. Ed Garvey?
Well, you know that things are going south when people are scrambling out to say, well, just because I was sitting behind Colin Powell, just because at the UN, just because I gave him the information, I was really talking about slam dunk with Shaq O'Neal ahead, and you were talking about the Sunday basketball game. I wonder if he's given back his Medal of Freedom. I mean, the thought of George Bush putting that Medal of Freedom around his neck, and now for Tenet to say, well, I didn't really mean it. He's making John Kerry's comments seem like truth-saying.
You know, the Russians under Gorbachev said, never before has our history been so unpredictable. And I think this is what I you can parse his words all you want to. I mean, I think Bill Clinton could say, what is the meaning of slam dunk? But it all amounts to the same thing. If the PR case could be made better, and that's what he was talking about, that's what he says now, that we could have had a stronger PR case, it's the same thing.
I think we could say that the mission accomplished statement was a bit premature.
Let's listen to Army Ranger Brian O'Neill testifying before a House committee this week that was looking into the death of Pat Tillman and how that was handled.
I wanted right off the bat to let the family know what had happened, especially Kevin, because I worked with him in the platoon, and I was quite appalled when I was actually able to speak with Kevin. I was ordered not to tell him what happened, sir.
You were ordered not to tell them.
Roger that, sir.
Roger that, Ed Garvey.
Nice touch.
I'm outraged. I honest to God. I mean, of all the things that have happened, the way they treated Pat Tillman, they were in search of a hero. They made it up. They knew they were lying, and they lied to the family. Same thing with Jessica Lynch. I mean, both of these incidents were attempts by the Bush administration to create a silk purse out of a sow's ear, and they got caught. But then this colonel who was investigating it said that the Tillman family probably was more upset because they're not good Christians and don't believe in the afterlife. Now we've got people suggesting that if they're not good Christians by the definition of the Bush administration, they don't feel the pain and agony of a son who was killed, and then they lied about the death in order to glorify themselves. So my sympathies are with the family, and it just seems that somebody ought to get fired. But they'll probably find some private somewhere and kick him out.
Well, this morning's New York Times talks about, it has an op-ed from a...
You read that left-wing newspaper?
I have to.
Oh, my goodness.
I know what's going on with you, Ed. And they get it in Baghdad, and we get it in Madison. So there's a Marine Lieutenant General who was responsible for the Jessica Lynch case. And he says, his column is, the politicians, and the strong inference was from her home state of West Virginia, wanted medals pinned on her, and he said, not until we investigate this. And he said the military had no, in fact, they said don't jump to conclusions. The word was that she went down firing her weapon until she was out of bullets. That never happened. They were very cautious about that. So I think there is a need for heroes. We want heroes. There's such a lack of you know, where's the Lech Walesa in the Middle East? Where is the Vaclav Havel? Some statesman in one of those countries ought to say, we're going to march forward into the bright sunshine and not into these into this madness.
I wouldn't get into that, but where's the Tommy Thompson? I mean, you know, what we need are some leaders who are willing to tell the truth about what's happening. And for the military to lie about the Tillman matter the way they did, or the administration, is just saddening.
Well, I guess what I'm suggesting, though, Ed, is that I didn't follow this all that closely, but I think what the generals were doing with this soldier who testified was saying, don't be making comments here until we've had a full investigation.
Well, then somebody ought to find out who told the military that and they ought to be fired.
Well, we had a caller that didn't want to wait, I guess, but he wanted to bring up Dennis Kucinich's call this week to impeach Dick Cheney. What about that, Ed Garvey?
Well, would I like Dick Cheney to be impeached? Absolutely, and go for Bush and get rid of the whole crew. It's not going to happen because there isn't enough time, even if they wanted to do it. I think Dick Cheney, in his recent appearances, seems a bit unhinged. The president seems disconnected. It's a very scary moment in our history where I think the two top people in our administration are not in touch with the Congress and not, don't even seem to be in touch with their own administration. They're paying no attention to the people of this country, so... Could we impeach him? John Nichols would say yes. It would be nice to do, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Dave Blaska?
Well, you better start a little smaller than the vice president, maybe the secretary of interior, and then work your way up and see how that works.
This is what about these calls, increasing calls for World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz to resign? Apparently, Paul Wolfowitz wanted to give his girlfriend a job or something along those lines. Ed, what do you think?
I mean, the symbol of this Iraqi nonsense is Paul Wolfowitz. And he goes to the World Bank as president because President Bush put him there. And it turns out he takes his girlfriend and gives her a raise of $132,000 to $196,000 tax-free, which is more than your pledge drive, I think, is going to require a week from now. And Wolfowitz, despite people chanting that he should go from the employees and from the vice presidents of the bank and from the European Union, Bush and Wolfowitz now say, no, they won't. He won't resign. So, again, it's the Wolfowitz-Gonzalez-McCain school of dig in your heels and refuse to listen to reason.
I think the real news is that Paul Wolfowitz had a girlfriend.
All right. Well, we're going to move on to some state issues, other issues in the news going on in the state legislature and around Wisconsin after we take this short break. We are reviewing the news of the week with Ed Garvey, senior partner in the law firm of Garvey McNeil and McGilvery. He's also editor and publisher of FightingBob.com, and David Blaska, former Dane County supervisor, appointee to the Thompson administration, a contributing writer to the Isthmus newspaper in Madison. And you can join us, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is our Friday Week in Review, talking this week with Dave Blaska and Ed Garvey. A reminder that it's your views on the news after 4 o'clock this afternoon. Ben Marins and his guest will talk with you about the top news stories of the week, including that Iraq vote in Congress. And they'll talk more about the Pat Tillman investigation as well and other issues in the news. We're going to switch over to some other issues, including state issues. This week, we did have the Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert College Survey Center poll, lots of different poll numbers. But one of them, we did ask about presidential candidates. Tommy Thompson was number two in Wisconsin on the Republican ticket. As if the election were to be held today, who would you vote for in Wisconsin? Rudy Giuliani, 36%. Tommy Thompson, about 30%. So Tommy's doing pretty good in the state of Wisconsin at this early time. But Ed Garvey, maybe not so good in the rest of the country?
Well, first I should compliment Dave Blaska because he came to Fighting Bob Fest last year. And I'm sure on September 8th this year he'll come again and proving that we're bipartisan and nonpartisan.
I want to be on your agenda.
Let's not go too far now. Well, Tommy has convinced me that he ought to come home. His speech to the Reform Jewish group saying that he's now in the private sector and making money, which is a Jewish tradition, pretty well ended, I think, any speculation that he's ready for the big leagues. And he went on to praise the Jewish Defense League, which I'm sure he didn't mean to do or he hadn't thought about it. So he's not going to go anywhere. He's not going to raise the kind of money he needs. I don't think he's going to do well in Iowa, and that will be the end of his candidacy. So Mayor of Elroy sounds like a better choice.
Dave?
Long history of misunderestimating, as the president would say, Tommy G. Thompson.
He beat me.
Yeah, well, enough said, huh? I don't know. He obviously has got to do very well in Iowa, and I think if he comes close and comes in second, that's the expectations game is he's got to win Iowa. He's put all his chips down in Iowa. And he could. He is very good at retail, not good at wholesale, and Iowa's a retail state.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Chris in Oshkosh. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi. As far as Tommy Thompson goes, I think his worst-case scenario is actually doing well in Iowa and getting real national media scrutiny because he doesn't have a steel door big enough to bolt the skeletons into the closet that he's generated over his political career.
Well, I'm getting a little nervous about where that's going because I don't think we have any proof that of any skeletons. But, Ed Garvey, you know of some skeletons, but you don't have to release them.
I ran against Tommy, and we had an understanding that personal family matters are totally off the table, not to be talked about. So I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, let's see. The other issue we wanted to talk about in the news this week on the state level is that Supreme Court Justice-elect Annette Ziegler is fighting some conflict of interest charges. Ed, what's happening here?
Well, the Ethics Board, some people think it disappeared, but it hasn't yet. It came forward and said that she had violated the rules of ethics by ruling on cases where her family had a substantial financial interest on several occasions. And her attorney, who also had represented Justice John Wilcox when he had problems with out-of-state pro-voucher money coming in, said that the Supreme Court should dismiss the matter It shouldn't be a matter for the ethics board. So you sort of see them trying to extract the teeth of the bulldog to make sure that there is not heard. There was a case in Minnesota where a potential colleague was questioned and the entire Supreme Court recused itself and appointed other judges to sit as the court because they felt that it would be terribly awkward to say perhaps a conflict of interest to rule on one of their colleagues. So this really raises lots of tough questions. For example, will her lawyer now be, will she recuse herself if she is seated on the court every time he or his partners appear? It's also the same law firm that where the Attorney General worked. So it gets pretty complicated, and I would hope that the court will either recuse itself or deal decisively and say let the ethics board rule.
Dave Blaska?
Well, only that, I thought when all this came out, I thought Annette Ziegler is cooked, and yet she won decisively, and I think that's regardless of whatever ethics problems she may have, and that'll all be sorted out. I think the lesson of this is people still did not want to succumb to the tort lobby, and they liked her conservative values, and that trumped everything. So I think that's a lesson learned.
Well, I think the lesson is that money trumps everything else. I mean, every editorial board in the state endorsed Linda Clifford.
Yeah.
Judges and others did as well. But Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, not satisfied with controlling the legislature, bought this election, and I think it's just that simple.
To vote? I think this is a good segue if we wanted to get into campaign finance. But
well, let's do that. Let's talk about the U.S. Supreme Court hearing arguments this week in a case that involves the McCain-Feingold law that restricts pre-election issue ads that mention a candidate by name. This is a case that Wisconsin's Right to Life is involved in. It wants to be able to run these issue ads naming candidates. Dave Blaska, what do you think of this?
Well, and so does the WMC. You talk about strange bedfellows here. This is as pure a free speech issue as I've ever heard. You've got the ACLU, you've got the NRA, you've got the Chamber of Commerce, you've got the pro-life, all allied together. The Supreme Court is considering this issue. It comes out of Wisconsin Right to Life, as you mentioned. The appellate court wrote 1,000 pages on this issue about whether or not Right to Life was urging the defeat of Russ Feingold. Now, why are our courts parsing political speech, which I think our founders said ought to be the freest of speech? When we define pornography or burning the flag as free speech, but we put the clamps on political speech, to me that's just perverse. And I predict that this McCain-Feingold, this major portion of it, will be overturned by a 5-4 vote.
Well, sadly, the Bush court is now in full bloom, and I think affirmative action will go. I think the Clean Air Act will go. I think McCain-Feingold will go.
I see Chicken Little here.
They are in charge, and they've got two branches of government. They did have three for quite a while. So the problem begins with this. For well over 100 years, we've said that corporations cannot contribute directly to campaigns. So what they've done is they've come up with these front groups, whether it's the Right to Life or whether it's Democrats for the Progress or Republicans for Regress or whatever it might be, and they pour the money in, and they claim they shouldn't have to register or disclose how much money they are giving or where the money comes from. So they want to deny to people the right to know where the money is coming from and where it's going. So there's no question Right to Life. They didn't say call this number or call Feingold. They told you to go to their website, mm-hmm. and you go to their website, and they say, I hate Feingold, basically.
And I think we can do that in this country. I think I can say that it's on the public airwaves, I can say that.
And you can say, you can yell fire in a crowded theater, but we think there are some limits. I can't call you a mass murderer, because if I do, you might sue me for libel. But there are some limitations that make sense, and that is disclosure and to say that corporations and unions should not be giving money directly to candidates. That was the fundamental basis for McCain-Feingold and what we've really believed in for
It says
a couple
hundred years. You can't mention a sitting office holder's name 30 days prior to a primary.
Why would you?
Because there might be legislation coming up that affects the hod carriers or the...
If there's a piece of legislation, should they go to the elections board and say, we have a position on this and have forever?
They should not seek the permission of government to speak.
Because they should just have that right.
They should just have
and
that right.
And the candidates just are at the mercy of...
You know, and I'm not going to allow... we've talked about, you know, boycotting Fox. I'm not going to allow the Capital Times or the New York Times...
Hey, you're a former reporter there. What are you talking
about? I'm not going to allow them to define me. In my 12 races for county board, I was not going to allow the Capital Times to define David Blaska, even though they have access to the presses 7 days a week. I needed money to put my message out so that people could hear from me directly what I stood for, not have it filtered
right.
through John Nichols.
It's not filtered through them. It's filtered through Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and pouring hundreds of thousands of dollars in the campaigns.
Or
they're buying. We don't have elections anymore.
Or
we
the
have
environmental
auctions.
Lobby or the
That's
teachers
right.
union. But you know what?
All of them should be barred.
And you know, people talk about the NRA as some dark, sinister force.
Okay.
There's about several million members. That's why they're so powerful. People belong to them. They asked the Democrats last night, "Do you ever own a gun?" Yeah, most of them did.
All right, you know, I love a good fight, but we have to go on to some other issues.
Yeah.
And in this one, it's not exactly related, but Wisconsin hospitals would be required to provide emergency contraception to rape victims under a bill that received a committee hearing in this past week. We heard during that testimony from a rape victim who was supportive of the bill.
Being asked if I wanted EC pulled me out of my catatonic shock and reminded me that I could, in fact, still make decisions about my body and what is done to it.
EC meaning emergency contraception. So have a prediction on what's going to happen to this bill, Ed Garvey?
Well, it should pass if people have their heads screwed on right. I mean, for heaven's sakes, a rape victim should know what her rights are with respect to her own body, and to suggest that she can't is ludicrous.
Mm-hmm. Dave Blaska?
I hate this question. I really do.
Why?
You know, I am pro-life. That's if there was going to be an exception, that would be it.
Okay. Do you think it'll pass?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll offer an honest answer. I don't know.
Yeah. How about the cable TV competition bill that is it's now been postponed or at least slowed down. The Senate voted to send it to the Joint Finance Committee to figure out how much this would cost the state of Wisconsin. Apparently what this would do would be to open up the state to other cable contributor or competitors.
Yeah,
contributors,
yes,
there we go.
It
would be a statewide contract rather than the franchise negotiating with local communities. What's wrong with this bill, Ed Garvey?
Well, you know, every time a local community does something, the big boys come in and say, take it away from them and give it to the state so that we can influence it through our campaign contributions. So if Madison and La Crosse and Eau Claire raise the minimum wage, they pass a bill saying you can't do that. It's got to come through the state. If a local community say power lines can't go across public lands, they say, oh, yes, they can. Under eminent domain, they can do it. Here we've got local cable control. They want to put it in the state so that AT&T has fewer people to visit with their campaign contributions. Their lead lobbyist said that even though they gave $54,000 to legislators and to the governor, that they never do this with a specific bill in mind. I don't know what his other 14 lobbyists were doing. I guess they probably report to their shareholders, we gave $54,000 to a bunch of ingrates in Wisconsin who don't pay any attention to us when we give them money. They bought this bill, and they were unfurling the mission accomplished banner just when somebody said, well, maybe we ought to find out how much this is going to cost. But the real question is the control, and the control will be with AT&T and their well-paid lobbyists and the amount of money that they pour into campaigns.
But don't you want more competition to cable television?
Well, that's not the way to do it. If you're going to do it, there's a better way to do it, and that is to keep the local control and perhaps have some standards. But I don't think that that's what this is all about. It's all about control, getting rid of public access, and making it more difficult for minority voices to be heard.
Dave Blaska?
Well, but there's more to it than that, of course. This bill does seem to have bipartisan support. It does seem to also offer the consumer some redress. You know, when you think about it, I think there's something like 1,920 municipalities in Wisconsin, and I think in 1970s they went city by city, village by village, and to be honest, some of these smaller entities were, I think, a little overwhelmed, did not have the resources to make I think this is where the industry is going. But you want to talk about the campaign cash and whatnot. You know, we'll come back to that. That's called full disclosure, and you know that, and I know that, and we can make our voting decisions
but
based on that.
Let's see if we can make a deal here. Any company or union or anyone else who is trying to do business with the state should be prohibited from making campaign contributions.
Why?
Because they're buying votes. They aren't giving the money because people look good. I mean, when you get the governor
and the speaker.
Well,
who gets to contribute then? Who gets to contribute? I mean, if I'm a school teacher, but I'm a school teacher or I'm a farmer, but I do it because I join the Farmers Union or the Farm Bureau and I say, you know, educate me on the issues. And they say, and then I take a vote at these conventions, and the WEAC has the same thing. And they say, these candidates are good for farmers. Let's elect these candidates. But you know what? They don't want their message filtered through the Capital Times. They want to make their own message out and rent their own press.
Well,
so they contribute money because they're good for farmers, or because they're good for teachers, or because they're good for the environment, or because they're good for business and job creators and people who hire people and pay us the wages.
I think we could agree that if they weren't good for farmers, you wouldn't be happy with WEAC, so they must be.
Yeah. Just a couple of minutes to go here. The Tibetan flag will fly on top of the government building in Madison next month when the Dalai Lama comes to visit. Last night, a city-county committee unanimously approved the request to fly the flag during the Dalai Lama's three-day visit starting on May 2nd. It was a request that drew objections from the Freedom From Information Foundation, saying that it would be inappropriate for this flag to fly because the Dalai Lama is a religious leader. But the flag will fly according to the vote yesterday. Dave Blaska?
Well, I'm hoping to invite Pope Benedict here because he is the head of state, and we'll keep Annie Laurie Gaylor quiet on this one.
I have no objection to the Tibetan flag flying.
Do you have any comment on Rosie O'Donnell? Now, this is not a state issue, but Rosie O'Donnell said she's not going to return to The View. She's not signing another contract. She says this is her choice. Others are saying she got bumped because she was making all sorts of controversial statements, including 9/11 was an inside job. Have any inside information on this, Ed Garvey?
No, but, you know, you think of Phil Donahue, for example. He certainly got bumped from MSNBC because he was taking, you know, dissenting views. Big business controls the corporations control the media, so she's probably right. That's why you have to support public radio and public television.
Dave Blaska, Rosie O'Donnell.
A nation mourns.
See you at Bob Fest on September 8th.
When is it?
September 8th.
September 8th.
Yes. Peace.
Thanks very much to Ed Garvey for being here and Dave Blaska. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Ed Garvey is senior partner at the law firm of Garvey, McNeil, and McGilvery, a former Democratic candidate for governor and U.S. Senate, editor and publisher of FightingBob.com. David Blaska, former Dane County supervisor and appointee to the Thompson administration and a contributing writer to the Isthmus newspaper in Madison. And speaking of fundraising and our spring pledge drive, it starts next week, May 3rd. Your online pledge before the drive will help shorten the drive. Members have already contributed more than $10,000 toward our goal of $275,000. When the goal is reached during this drive, it will end. If we happen to reach the goal before May 3rd, we won't even start the drive. Let's see if we can make that happen. You can pledge online at WPR.org. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager and Cheryl Gasser for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.